picture of the mitochondria, a little bit structure function. Remember, glycolysis is a cytosolic process. Now we're going to be talking a lot about the mitochondria, so I wanted to do a little review, kind of what it looks like in a rough cartoon. So you have the outer membrane, then between the outer and inner membrane is the inner membrane space. The inner mitochondrial membrane is going to be really important when we talk about the citric acid cycle. Remember all those little indentations, so the inner mitochondrial membrane is actually very big. If we stretched it out, it's much, much longer than the outer mitochondrial membrane. It gives us a lot of space for the electron transport chain to be aligned, etc. And of course, inside there is the matrix, and we'll also talk quite a bit about the matrix. So again, it gives you just a brief outline. Of course, the outer membrane is basically what separates the mitochondria from the other parts of the cell. It's a barrier, not a particularly selective one. It's the barrier to compounds or molecules with molecular weight greater than 10,000, so it's not particularly selective. The inner membrane space is where most of the things, the functions, the enzymes that keep the mitochondria alive, so specific to it, are located. And the inner membrane, notice now, is much more specific, so membrane being a semi-permeable barrier. It only lets very small uncharged molecules in. That allows really specific regulated control. And again, there's where we'll find the electron transport chain and a lot of the enzymes for the citric acid cycle. Then in the matrix, there is enzymes for decarboxylating pyruvate, which we're going to see in just a minute, the PDH. Enzymes for the citric acid cycle, fats, which we'll talk about next semester, beta oxidation, ketones, synthesis and oxidation next semester, amino acid metabolism next semester, and some of the gluconeogenic process, because remember, most of gluconeogenesis will be in the cytosol, will be exact reversal of glycolysis, but to get that first step from pyruvate back up to PET, we're going to be going into the mitochondria and crossing back and forth. So that will be a little bit complex. Not overly, but a little bit complex. So cytosolic process, glycolysis, now we're going to the mitochondria. Our key intermediates, bringing them up again from all the metabolic pictures, pathways, where they intersect. Glucose-6-phosphate, pyruvate, acetyl-CoA. This is pyruvate, which again we made through a process called glycolysis from glucose, galactose, or fructose. Now in our energy count, we've made two ATPs, no matter which one of those sugars we started with, which one of those monosaccharides. And the pyruvate now can go on and do lots of things. Notice it can become amino acids, alanine, we'll see that next semester. Oxaloacetate, that is one of the first intermediates in synthesizing fats. So it goes to fatty pathways. It goes to acetyl-CoA, which we'll see today. That's a key for energy for most cells. Acetyl-CoA will go into the TCA cycle and give us energy. And then, of course, for the red blood cells particularly, it goes to lactic acid or lactate. Lactate. And we saw that in glycolysis. That's the enzyme which we're all familiar with, LDH. We talked about the isozymes of LDH when we talked about enzymes and isozymes as a type of enzyme. Here's acetyl-CoA. Again, another kind of key. So we're going to see pyruvate, the PDH enzyme today, we get acetyl-CoA. Notice again, it's linked to the protein metabolism pathways, to amino acids, to fats, to sterols. It's actually the starting molecule to synthesize cholesterol and all of our steroid hormones, ketones, and the citric acid cycle. And again, you don't need to memorize all of these, but again, keeping in mind you do need to know the three key intermediates that we keep emphasizing, glucose-6-phosphate, pyruvate and acetyl-CoA, and how they really link all of this biochemistry together. So now we've got pyruvate, and basically overall what we need to do is decarboxylate it and stick a coenzyme A on it. And to do that, we're going to look at a very complex multi-enzyme called pyruvate dehydrogenase complex, or PDH, the PDH. The only thing you need to know as far as exam material about the PDH is this overall equation that you see in front of you right now. So you need to know what goes into the PDH, the three things, pyruvate, coenzyme A, or CoA, and an NAD+. That's going to go into this multi-enzyme complex. The only other thing you need to know about the complex is what comes out. You get a CO2, an acetyl-CoA, an NADH, and an H-plus ion. That's all you need to know about the complex as far as exam material. We're going to talk about it in some detail now, but it's very complex, and you don't need to worry about the complexities of it, but just know what goes in, pyruvate, coenzyme A, NAD+, what comes out, CO2, acetyl-CoA, which is why we like this complex, and why that's what goes into the TCA cycle, NADH, and an H-plus balances things out. These pictures that you see here are part of the complex, just to give you an idea. Lipoate is not there. I guess I couldn't find a nice picture of lipoate. Lipoate looks like this. And again, of course, no structures on this exam. So when we get to the day before exam chat room, and I guess for the 1,000th time, what structures do we need to know? And people ask it so often, the students in the chat room begin answering it, which is kind of funny. We don't need structures, remember. So those of you who don't like them or have trouble with them, this will be good for you. So this is thiamine diphosphate, TDP, lipoate, and we've seen coenzyme A. And again, just to give you an idea, they're fairly structurally complex other than lipoate, particularly coenzyme A. And remember, as you look at coenzyme A, this is the key, this active sulfur. The rest of this is kind of along for the ride. And if you remember back to NADH and FADH2, they are also very complex, and we only use a very tiny piece of the molecule is where the electron transfer occurs. So that's why we write it as CoASH, because that reactive SH is what's important. You can see it written both ways. It's in the notes, CoA, that's correct, or you can write CoASH. I usually like to write CoASH to remind us of that reactive sulfur. Yeah?
I'm sorry. In the three key intermediates were
glucose-6-phosphate, pyruvate, and acetyl-CoA. So here is the complex. Again, TDP, substrates, products, prosthetic groups, coenzymes. Fairly complex, lots of arrows. I once saw this presented, and a guy brought in 3 styrofoam balls, and it was kind of a nice presentation. He showed the molecules moving around, but I've been unable to kind of get that together as a demo. I can't repeat it somehow. But what goes in again and what comes out, everything else is part of this enzyme. So the only things that come in are pyruvate, CoA, SH, and NAD+. Acetyl-CoA, NADH, and CO2 come out. Everything else stays connected to the enzyme. It's actually part of the enzyme complex. So it's got an E1, an E2, and E3. So it's got 3 parts to it. And E1 is where the pyruvate comes in. So we've made pyruvate and glycolysis from glucose, galactose, or fructose. Doesn't matter which one. All 3 monosaccharides give us pyruvate. Pyruvate binds to the E1 complex and reacts with that TDP, which stays, it's part, it's attached, it's a cofactor of the E1 part of the enzyme. That is where the decarboxylation occurs, so that's where we get release of CO2. And basically, we pass that little 2-carbon unit with the hydroxyl group onto the TDP. Then, it reaches over to the other part, to E2, and basically, lipoate becomes acetylated by that 2-carbon unit. And so that's when the oxidation of the alcohol occurs to the keto group. And if we have an oxidation, we must have a counter reduction. And that is in fact happening in the lipoate. Notice the lipoate has a sulfur bond, which can easily be reduced and oxidized. And the TDP then is regenerated. Remember, it stays part of the enzyme. So it stays right on E1. It's ready to go again. Because, of course, as we look at all the pathways, remember, nothing's stopping and starting completely. The acetylated lipoate then reacts with the incoming coenzyme A. Remember, that's one of the things that's coming into the enzyme there. And then we get acetyl-CoA. Okay, so there's our acetyl-CoA. Really, we now have what we need to go into the TCA cycle. We took the pyruvate, we made acetyl-CoA. At the same time, the acetyl-CoA is forming. The lipoate is reduced again. The reduced lipoate's got to be oxidized back. That's done by an FAD. Remember, that's not coming in, though. It's part of E3. Notice it's stuck there. And that produces FADH2. We got to regenerate the FAD because we've got to set all this up to go again. And it turns out that the FAD is regenerated by the NAD plus, which is coming in. That's one of the things coming in. And what comes out, it yields us an NADH. We're going to see this NADH again because we're going to add up our energy. So we actually do get one NADH, which will turn out to be energy from the PDH cycle. This whole enzyme, this multi-enzyme complex, the PDH, is feedback inhibited. So remember, that's one of our most common types of inhibition. It's a very easy type. So if we start to get too much in our pool of acetyl-CoA or too much in the pool of NADH, then it slows the enzyme down. So it feedback inhibits. So that means two of the products from the enzyme, the acetyl-CoA and the NADH, actually can slow it down. So if we start to get too much acetyl-CoA and too much NADH, it'll slow it down. It would be difficult to get too much acetyl-CoA because remember it's a key intermediate and look at all the pathways in which it can be fed. So if that concentration starts to go up, all those pathways will become activated and quickly bring it back to its normal level. But it will inhibit, slow down, remember inhibit. There's again the reminder what goes in, what comes out. Pyruvate, CoA, NAD+, what do we get out? CO2, acetyl-CoA, NADH, and a hydrogen ion balances out the whole equation. So now we've gone through this little kind of segue, and what we've got now is the citric acid cycle. And I'm going to actually put up on the screen the cycle because the legend, I'm not sure why, but I have it way up, I have the legend way above the actual cycle. So there's the cycle, and of course the one on the board gives us the abbreviation, so we don't have to write out alpha-ketoglutarate, alpha-ketoglutarate dehydrogenase, alpha-KG, dehydrogenase DH. So now we have our acetyl-CoA, and in it goes to the cycle. It reacts with an oxaloacetate from the cycle, and the enzyme there is citrate synthase. That's a really highly exergonic reaction, so it's very spontaneous. That's good. Keeps the cycle going. And basically what we do is we get a condensation of acetyl-CoA and oxaloacetate to give us citrate. Also notice that then the CoA, it's basically going back to a pool of coenzyme A. There's lots of coenzyme A around using a lot of biosynthetic processes. So as it goes back, it's available again to go into the PDH for the next molecule of pyruvate that's coming along. The first important, as we'll say, reaction is the reaction of isocitrate going to alpha-ketoglutarate. Notice it's isocitrate dehydrogenase. Whenever we see dehydrogenase DH, oxidation reduction. And that's the very first site for the production of our first molecule of NADH. So that's key, isocitrate dehydrogenase. Next step, alpha-ketoglutarate going to succinyl-CoA. There's CoA again coming back into the cycle from the pool. The enzyme there is key, alpha-ketoglutarate dehydrogenase. It's key because it produces the second NADH of the cycle. So right away we now have two NADHs. We also have a bunch of CO2, which remember the ultimate fate of the carbon is CO2, and it's basically respirated out. And we'll trace the carbons next semester. The next step is an interesting one. It's succinyl-CoA going to succinate, and the enzyme succinyl-CoA synthase. And you'll notice in your notes, we get out of that a GTP. And why it's interesting to get a GTP from GDP, which is clearly a transfer of phosphate. And notice in this reaction, this is actually the only substrate level phosphorylation in this cycle. We saw a number of them in glycolysis. We actually saw four sites where we had substrate-level phosphorylation. The only one in the PCA cycle is the succinyl-CoA synthetase. And what's happening there is we're actually getting transfer of a phosphate group from GTP to ADP, which gives us ATP. So you have the reaction there in your notes under number four, succinyl-CoA synthetase. It's the only substrate-level phosphorylation in the cycle. And notice, from every GTP, we get one ATP. So we care because this is part of our energy production, and that's what we're the big picture, that's what we're talking about. How do we get energy? How for locomotion, for biosynthesis, for cellular activity, for everything that goes on. We get it mainly from ATP. So every GTP we generate in this reaction gives us an ATP. Next step, we go from succinate to fumarate. Another dehydrogenase. This time, though, with succinate dehydrogenase, we do have oxidation reduction, but we generate, instead of an NADH, our only FADH2. So we only get one FADH2 from the cycle. It will give us energy, just like NADH. Fumarate goes to malate, not overly exciting. Malate, the very last step, goes to oxaloacetate. That's another dehydrogenase, and that's the third site, malate dehydrogenase, for our NADH. NADH. Now, again, what's key is energy, but before we talk about energy, I want to talk about the regulation, which I put in my little picture here. And for counting energy, we're going to say one NADH yields three ATP, one GTP yields one ATP, and one FADH2 yields two ATP. And for now, you'll just have to take my word that that actually happens. We're going to see it in some detail, unless you care to read ahead to electron transport chain. That's where we'll actually see how does NADH and FADH2 become ATP. We will see that. But for now, we'll say it happens. So the three enzymes that are regulated, which are on the picture under the screen, which we'll put back up there as soon as we're done here, citrate synthase, isocitrate dehydrogenase, and alpha-ketoglutarate dehydrogenase. In the little table, it tells you specifically which molecule inhibits which enzyme. Now, overall, if you list out the four compounds that can inhibit this cycle, you see succinyl-CoA, ATP, NADH, and GTP. And it's not so overly important that you know which one inhibits which enzyme. But those are the four things that can slow down. Remember, inhibit, let's translate that to slow down the cycle. Succinyl-CoA, ATP, NADH, and GTP. Succinyl-CoA was, it's hard to say why it does that. It's very common in these metabolic pathways to have an intermediate in the pathway be a regulator. That's basically all we can say about that one. But the other three things you will notice something about them, ATP, NADH, and GTP. They're all signals of high energy. So whenever we get enough, too much, a little excess of those things, we can slow down energy production a little bit. So that's why those three things would inhibit, slow down the cycle, ATP, NADH, GTP. Succinyl-CoA is an intermediate in the pathway, it feedback inhibits. Notice there is one particular molecule that can actually speed the pathway up, and that is ADP. And ADP can actually stimulate isocitrate dehydrogenase to increase the rate of the pathway, ADP. So that is the only and one molecule that is stimulatory. Now, the reason I gave us values for NADH and FADH2 is because they actually can vary depending on shuttle systems, and we don't want to really get hung up in that. So let's not worry about that yet. We'll talk about the shuttles on the very last Monday, December 1st. So looking at the energy, which we said is going to be big, let's add it up and see how big it is. You get an NADH from the pyruvate dehydrogenase complex. Okay? Remember, we went through, one of the things that came out was an NADH. So we're going to get three ATPs from that NADH. Then the citric acid cycle itself, we get one, two, three NADHs, each one of those giving us three ATPs. We get one FADH2 giving us two ATPs, and one GTP giving us one ATP. So we actually get a total of 15 ATPs. Now, you often see this written as 12 ATPs per turn of the TCA cycle. What that means is they're leaving out the NADH and the ATP from the pyruvate dehydrogenase complex, because that's not really classically part of the citric acid cycle. The cycle is the round thing, the citric acid cycle. So you always talk about pyruvate going in and taking a turn. particularly when you trace the carbons and what is the fate of the carbons of pyruvate. You take one ton around the TCA cycle. That leads 12 12 ATP. Now, of course, you've got to remember the whole second half of the glycolytic pathway, we did everything in double. So we made two of everything. Because remember, we got a dihydroxyacetone phosphate and a glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate, and we have this nice isomerase that gives us two molecules of glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate. So we really ended up with two pyruvates, so we got two acetyl-CoA, so everything doubled. So all doubled, you get about 30 ATP per glucose molecule, or per galactose molecule, per fructose molecule. So that's a lot of energy from a monosaccharide. And of course, remember, it's never one. We're looking at one, but this is happening, you know, millions of times. So a lot of energy, 30 ATP. And again, for now, you have to take my word on how the NADH and FADH2 become ATP. It has to do with electrons bouncing down the electron transport chain and driving a pump, active transport, a pump that actually produces the ATP. So that in a